from education to employment and everything in between. It's a clearinghouse for all things shale. It's the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender.
Good morning. Welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm DC Taylor, along with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender. And we like to present to you this week a special webinar hosted by our friend Matt Henderson. And he is going to be featured on this webinar with the Chief Excellence Officer from CNX Resources. And well, I'll let Matt explain what all's going on, what they got going on, and a very interesting conversation for you here right now on the Shale Gas News.
I'd like to welcome everybody to today's webinar. My name is Matt Henderson. I'll be your host for today. Today, we're joined by Yemi Akinkube, the Chief Excellence Officer for CNX Resources. CNX not only has a long history of natural gas development, of energy production across the basin, but also is a leader in utilizing local resources. Today, we're thrilled to hear a little bit more about the Appalachia First initiative that CNX has launched and how we can get involved and what that means for the basin. So, Yemi, I'm excited to hear more about it, and I'm going to turn the room over to you, sir.
Thanks again for the warm welcome, Matt. For those that don't know CNX, which I think probably a few of the people watching already know CNX. CNX, we are a natural gas producer in the Appalachian region, and we are a low cost, very efficient upstream and midstream Appalachian company, which is well vertically integrated. And one of the things, we've been sharing with people is our vision for the region, our vision when it comes to the Appalachian producing region, given the fact that we, in the Appalachian region, we produce about 30% of the overall production within the entire United States. And, looking at that and hearing that, our vision is relatively simple, Appalachia first. We produce it here and we use it here first. We look at that as that's the best way we can catalyze the economy of the region. We have abundant energy. We have abundant low emissions, low cost, natural gas in the region. This is the opportunity to leverage this asset that we have to pretty much, turn loose the economy potential of the region. Our goal is, again, produce it here. We produce a lot of it here. We use it here first to transform the Appalachian region. And that's what I'll be talking to you about today with regards to Appalachia First vision. So why the vision? Why this vision? We look at the vision that this uniquely fits, Appalachia. If uniquely fits CNX, CNX is almost 160-year-old company within the region. And what we see what has actually propelled us for this 160 years is what we see that is going to propel us again for the next 160 years. And the key things here is first on that Appalachian focused vision. Again, we've been here for 158 years. We invest in our employees. We invest in the community. We've spent over almost the last decade, we've spent about we've invested $30 million into the community, and we are focused on investing another $30 million into the community going forward. We recruit, the brightest and the best because within the region, within the Appalachian region, that's where we've been able to find the best and the brightest, the best work ethic, innovation that has continually sustained our company so far. And one of the other things we continue to focus on is new technology. If you look at the energy over the course of this 150 years, 160 years, it has morphed. It is more from, you started with mechanization, automation. Now we're looking into more of the focus on artificial intelligence and more automation within the industry. And this has been pretty much the DNA of the Appalachian region. This has been the DNA of the energy industry as we see it today. And we, within CNX, we have formed a group within our organization that are focused on new technologies to unleash and continue to expand the reach and the capability of natural gas within our region, within the United States, and the world as a whole. Now, how does this fit in when we start to look at you know, the region. We at CNX, we operate within, you know, the tri-state area in Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Virginia. And if you look at, you know, within the fairway of the Appalachian Formation, you know, that is what we see as a, you know, logistical hub and industrial hub for development. When you look at the infrastructure that is within this region, well-connected infrastructure, and all of this infrastructure that we have, believe it or not, is close to about 50% of the populations are within just a day's drive, you know, from this location. That puts us right in the center of, you know, what I'll call the economic heartbeat of the country. You know, low energy clearly always drives economic growth. Low energy drives technological growth. Low energy drives industrial growth, manufacturing growth within a region. And in essence, we see this as a significant opportunity for us, given the fact that we have this low energy, not just low cost energy, it is clean energy. We have this opportunity to revitalize and to continue to grow, you know, the economy of the region, bringing in manufacturing to actually accomplish that. And, you know, we've been discussing for a while now, you know, in CNX and even, you know, advocating for the potential for natural gas, because we see it as something that is not really or truly being taken advantage of. You know, we see it as an essential resource that, you know, the policymakers, are not seeing the potential of. I mean, take, for example, when you look at this region and you look at low electricity costs, our natural gas, clean natural gas, provides low electricity costs, low manufacturing costs. And that is why we see it as a huge engine for the region. We see it, you know, as the basis for the national energy security. You know, right now, believe it or not, some people, you know, that we still import some energy from states that are not our friends. These are things that we, as in CNX, see as a vision to displace importation of some of this energy that we don't need. We can produce it. There's the opportunity, there's the capability, and there is the excitement of producing it here as opposed to actually importing it from, you know, sometimes unfriendly nations around us. And when you look at the communities where, you know, we operate as well, that has been the backbone of our success. That has been the backbone of what we see as what will revitalize, you know, the region going forward. And we started kind of like taking a look at some of the statistics and see where is this opportunity for natural gas. Let's start with, you know, the big areas, you know, when it comes to transportation. Using natural gas to displace the heavier hydrocarbons, for example, especially when it comes to transportation, we'll see cost savings. We'll see cost savings when it comes to airlines. We'll see cost savings when it comes to shipping. We'll see cost savings when it comes to trucking. All across transportation, we'll see cost savings in there. You know, some 60% in airlines, 60% in shipping, and 30% in trucking. Now, put that on top, you know, of the other one that I'll show you, which is the emissions reduction. The emissions reduction associated with it. So we're achieving two things. One, we're achieving cost reduction. The second one, we're also achieving emissions reduction, which is a focal point in today's day and age when it comes to, you know, energy and the environment. Key thing here is natural gas has been the bedrock, you know, the backbone of the emissions reduction, you know, to date within the United States. When you see how natural gas has been able to displace, you know, coal, and as a result of its cost effectiveness, one, and two, its emissions profile, we, you know, within the natural gas industry, we've done the country a significant service by being able to reduce emission while at the same time reducing energy costs. Now, when you compare that to some of the reductions that's being, you know, discussed out there, when it comes to the wind or the solar. And this is one discussion point that we continue to have when, you know, for people to truly understand the potential of natural gas, what it's done so far and what it could continue to do. You know, wind and solar, we see wind and solar as, you know, part of the energy portfolio of the United States. It is important. We are not against wind and solar, but when we discuss You know, the energy mix, especially when it comes to regional energy mix, we look at it that we have to look at it from the most effective, from the most cost effective energy mix for that region. And for our region, which is the Appalachian region, natural gas clearly is the most cost effective and the most appropriate energy, you know, for our region. You know, wind and solar, yeah, they have a place. But when we, again, when we look at it based off of geography, if, you know, we don't have relative to potentially, you know, Southern California when it comes to solar. Wind would, well, solar would do well in Southern California. But when it comes to wind, the mid central United States would do very well when it comes to wind. But when it comes to the Appalachian region, which are with our hills, you know, there are few ridge lines here for wind. Or, and when you look at the hills as well, kind of like shadow cover for solar, we see natural gas as the real engine for development within the Appalachian region. So that said, the key thing, you know, we started kind of like going through are the disadvantages that we see when it comes to solar and wind. When it comes to their effectiveness, the key thing here, I don't want the audience to look at, hey, why are you speaking so much about this? No, the key point is so that people can understand the challenges they face when it comes to their utility, especially within the Appalachian region. One, you know, I already talked about the applicability based off of geography, but the other aspect of it, when it comes to reliability, we have come to expect reliable power from, you know, from our electric generation infrastructure and the distribution infrastructure. We have come to expect that. One thing, I mean, we've seen a few unreliability or lack of reliability when it comes to this, the wind and solar. I mean, we saw it in Texas not too long ago. And, you know, again, this is the structure. This is by nature some of the deficiencies of this energy infrastructure that are out there. But more importantly, when you look at the infrastructure where it has been developed, a lot of people don't actually know for the fact that they are still backed up by, you know, natural gas powers. They're still backed up by fossil fuel power because of, you know, the issues with reliability. But more so when you look at also the manufacturing process, especially when it comes to the emissions footprint relating to wind and solar, they are not, it is not non-zero. You know, when you look at the challenges faced with mining the minerals, when you look at the challenges faced with actually manufacturing the parts related to them, some of those parts come from China. And we know that we cannot be certain that some of those parts are not manufactured by slave labor. We've heard about the issue, you know, with probably not going to pronounce it very well, in the Xinjiang province, wherein, you know, there were issues with slave labor. And also when you look at the practices when it comes to actually extracting some of these rare earth metals or some of these processes of developing and manufacturing this, they are not non-zero. These are very heavy, high emissions processes that are backed up by coal-fired plants. And again, looking at the value chain associated with bringing this, you know, this into the United States, again, developed in China, brought through transportation, through shipping, transported, you know, to the locations where they're going to be installed. These are emissions profile that typically people don't understand when it comes to wind and solar. They are heavily emissions. They have some emissions profile associated with them. But in addition to that, there are also issues with being able to source the materials to be able to manufacture them. But when it comes to natural gas, we already have this we already have it here. We're already developing it here. There's a lot of opportunities associated with developing and using natural gas within our society, within the Appalachian region. And therein lies the heart of our vision when we're saying, let's produce it here. Let's use it here. We have this low-cost energy. Does it even make sense at all to ship this low-cost energy to some of these regions where they use it to develop things and then ship it back to us in a circular way? And then we pay 10, sometimes a lot more or 10 times for this property, for this materials that we're buying from there. We have the low-cost energy here. Why not use it here? And again, when you start looking at the value chains associated with this, and this, the what you're seeing right now depicts the heart of what we call the truly Appalachia First vision. And our vision is we are producing it here. We are, you know, piping, or we are transporting it to the location where it is going, where the manufacturing will occur. We are making the parts. We'll be able to make the part within the Appalachian region, put a lot of people back to work, put a lot of, with people making families sustaining wages. And this way, manufacturing will come into the region. We'll be able to start, you know, enjoying the benefit of the resources that we have. One, based off, you know, being very highly, very, you know, competitive when we have low cost manufacturing because of low energy, we'll be able to take advantage of that within the Appalachian region, as opposed to the bottom part there, where we produce it here, we then ship it, you know, through LNG, which is, you know, another process of creating LNG to locations such as China. And there it will go through all kinds of manufacturing processes. You know, some of them could, you know, maybe ethical, may not be ethical. We don't know. We don't have good controls, or we don't have regulations that, you know, like we have here to control that. And all those goods are now manufactured and shipped back to us. Now, we have actually exported our manufacturing capability. We have exported our, you know, low cost energy advantage there. We have exported our, you know, economic growth to those locations. That's what we are trying to reverse. That is precisely what CNX is trying to reverse. Because we have it here, we have the capability, we have the resource, natural gas, to actually develop here. In addition to that, we also have the talent. We have the talent, the people within the Appalachian region, innovative talent, you know, excellent work ethic, to actually develop, to actually produce anything, pretty much anything and everything within this region. This is how we bring back manufacturing to our region. This is how we bring back, you know, the full-blown potential of our economic prowess back into this region, and we'll continue to enjoy it. Now, one key thing for us at CNX, one of the things we've been doing, the vision is just not a vision in the future. We're not looking at it as a vision in the future. This is a vision of now. This is something that we've started to put in action today. And I have two case studies to kind of share with you guys here. One, the first one is our partnership with the Pittsburgh International Airport. And this is the next phase. We've started the next phase of that partnership. The first phase of that partnership is the opportunities to develop the natural gas under the airport. The second phase is now leveraging that natural gas that has been developed there. One, to power a microgrid that, you know, to produce the energy and power that the airport requires. This is an opportunity when the airport is powered by natural gas, you know, that's being produced there, and also solar. And both of those are, you know, powering the entire airport, wherein they can literally be totally off grid. But the more, what I'll call the next phase in that actually revitalize and brings manufacturing, full-blown manufacturing into the airport, is the opportunity here to start creating what we call natural gas derivatives. This is LNG and CNG using CNX's technology on site, as opposed, you know, to actually bringing it in. Well, if you look at the amount of energy that's being consumed from diesel and jet fuel, at the airport, all the moving trucks and the planes flying in and out of there, we see an opportunity to displace jet aviation fuel and also diesel with natural gas. When you're using LNG as opposed to aviation fuel, and you're using CNG, and in some situation LNG as a result of just ground transportation, this is the next phase. This, we see this as a frontier, and we've started working with the airport to bring this to bear. Wherein, you know, we are going to, later this year, this technology that we have developed that is going through testing phase right now, that will allow us to generate on-ground, on-site CNG and LNG that could potentially be used at the airport for aviation and also for ground transportation. The amazing thing here, you know, if you look at it, you know, converting to LNG using CNX's technology, we could power the entire operation at the airport for 20 years, given 20 years, given Utica Shale that is underneath the airport, the potential of that is enormous. And you can think about it once we start this, if, you know, as we start to push on this, how the second tier, fourth tier opportunity starts to present itself at the airport with, with manufacturing or support services that is going to continue to propel this forward. The second case study that I have is, regarding New Light Technologies. This is a Southern California company in Huntington, California, that is bringing manufacturing into the region. They're coming to Hannibal, Ohio. And what are they doing? What they do here, what they're, you know, working on and what they're going to be developing in partnership with CNX is using natural gas. This is vented coal mine methane. This is coal mine methane that would normally be vented into the atmosphere that CNX is capturing. They are using that methane to create what we're calling biodegradable plastics. They're creating biodegradable plastic. Everybody understands that plastic is an issue right now when it comes to the ocean, cleaning the ocean. And they are creating this biodegradable plastic by, you know, using microorganisms that consume the methane. And as they consume the methane, they produce this plastic pellets that can be formed into plates, into straws, into all kinds of plastic wares that can displace the current plastic that we have right now. And this dissipate with time. They dissipate in no time. And this is, they're seeing the benefit of the energy that we have, the low cost energy that we have in Appalachia. And they're bringing that company all the way from California to the Appalachian region. They're coming to Ohio. Their first setup is going to be in Ohio. And I expect, you know, the next setup will probably be in the other states within the Appalachian region. This is a CNX's vision in action. This is why we're partnering with people and bringing this new technology into the region to start manufacturing again, because we see the significant potential for the region. How is this going to work? Well, it starts with the right policy framework. Gone are the days wherein we're apologizing for what the good and the benefit that natural gas and energy has done in the region. But one of the things we have to start doing is speaking up to make sure we have the right policy and right policy framework in place to achieve this vision that we have. You know, believe it or not, you know, low-income households spend a lot more in energy, and they are the ones being hurt by some of this anti-Appalachian development policies that are out there. You know, we talk about, you know, the electric vehicles. Yeah, they're great, but they're very expensive. Not too many people can afford them. And when you're looking at, you know, wind and solar and the benefits, we are all subsidizing wind and solar going forward, and that's expensive for us. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, with all the money and billions of dollars that have gone in subsidies in that direction, they just power 5% of the grid. And here is the clincher. The 5% that they power, they are also being backed by natural gas to make sure we have reliability. These are the framework of the current energy policy that does not make sense, that we all have to start to speak up, to address, to make sure that the right policies are in place for us to be able to fulfill this vision, for us to be able to put this vision in place, for us to be successful within the Appalachian region. So I think we are at about the 5-minute point right now. Matt, if you want us to start going and taking questions. Thanks.
Sure. Yeah, we have some coming in here. So the first question here says, you emphasize the importance of prioritizing the workforce and energy needs of Appalachia. How exactly will you focus on disadvantaged communities in the region and uplift those in need of economic development?
So one of the things we're doing in CNX, if you follow us, which I would encourage you to do so, we have, you know, and we've set this up as a model for other companies, or pretty much, you know, generally for, you know, the commercial side within the region. We have, what we call the Mentorship Academy. This is how we are focused, especially on the underserved communities, and bringing young men and women, talented young men and women, you know, bringing them and showing them and we're training them and use it so that this way they can start to learn this skill. They can start to build their skill set to be able to enter the workforce. We've seen a significant amount of talent within the Appalachian region. I mean, like it or not, I work with second, third, fourth, or fifth generation of CNX employees here. And that's because of that, we are focused at 100% of our employees, you saw it in that layout that I said, are from the region. That has what has benefited us. And leveraging the Mentorship Academy, bringing, you know, the underserved and underprivileged people within so that they can have this opportunity of getting into the workforce and being able to be fully integrated into workforce for them to be able to be successful going forward, you know, earning family sustaining wages. That's how we are achieving that. That's how we're developing that. And we continue to, share that, you know, on our social media so that other companies can see the benefit of it. They can see how impactful that is. And in essence, replicate it within the organizations as well. That's how we're doing that.
Okay. Well, thank you. I saw that you recently testified at a House Policy Committee hearing. And are there one or two public policies, whether state or federal, that you're particularly supporting or concerned with?
Yeah, when it comes to transparency on the energy portfolio. When we talk about emissions, they talk about, you know, the environmental signature or the environmental characteristics of energy or energy types. The issue that I think that where the government is missing it here is the transparency on that aspect. And that's why we try to make sure people understand and people see pure transparency when it comes to wind and solar, the capabilities, and also natural gas, so that, you know, folks within the region, they can make their decisions. They can make, you know, the right choice, and they can support and advocate appropriately when it comes to the energy, you know, the particular energy or the effective energy direction that should carry weight within the region. The other one here is comes from the permitting. You know, I was talking to I think one of the government officials not too long ago, and they were asking, hey, can you give us a clear scenario when it comes to, you know, permitting within the region, you know, whether it's state or federal permitting? And one of the things we talked about was, well, you know, the states are different. I know the philosophy is relatively the same, that if they want to ensure that things are done right. But when it comes to the federal side, you start to see issues where in some of the permitting is a never. You're not even a days or months or year. It's a never permit aspect of it. And as a result of those, we've seen a system that is so balkanized, wherein we can, instead of us enjoying the free flow of energy, the free flow of natural gas, to be able to fully benefit from that low cost all across the entire region, all across the United States. Some of this permitting issues have balkanized the system so much that, you know, some aspect of this country are paying significantly higher costs than other aspects. But we can benefit from this natural gas. Natural gas can truly achieve some of the strategic goals of this country. So when you're looking at it from the permitting side of things, when you're looking at it from the transparent side of things, those are just few ones that I think we need to kind of continue to speak out to the policymakers, that the policies around those two items need to be addressed, need to be changed.
It sounds like a common theme we hear about permitting and some of the infrastructure needs. So we're running out of time here. I do have a lot of questions that came in. I'll send to you if you could potentially answer them. But we did have some questions about where people can find more about this initiative and how can they reach out to you or CNX?
Yeah, I mean, you can always go at CNX, you go to www.cnx.com or within the CNX.com, there is a location called the Positive Energy Hub. We update that often. We provide all the information, that you may need to arm. We try to arm you with all the information that you need with regards to the Appalachia First vision. Also, you know, I'm on LinkedIn. Our CEO is very, very active. Nick DeLuz is very active when it comes to making sure people understand, making sure the truth is out there, making sure the facts are out there. You can follow him on LinkedIn. You can follow him on Twitter. Our goal is to provide all the information. Our goal is to speak up and speak out. Gone are the days wherein, again, we put our heads down to just continue our work. No, these are key issues when it comes to our future, the future of our region, the success and prosperity of our region that we all need to continue to speak out against.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. And I would encourage everybody to go on LinkedIn, like you said, to follow both of you. There's a lot of great information. We'll share this website and information with the attendees so they can learn more or make that direct connection. So again, Yemi, I appreciate your time for sharing your expertise and joining us today. And I thank all here as well. And wish everybody has a safe and good day. So thank you all.
Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you very much, Matt. Appreciate it.
There you go. Many thanks to our friend Matt Henderson for his contribution to the Shale Gas News today on this weekend's show. And I'm DC Taylor, along with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender. And it is time now for Fender's Fast and or Fun Facts. Rusty, via Skype. There you are. What do you have for us?
And thank you, DC. And Monday is May 1st, the start of another month. And a lot of folks may not know, DC, but it's actually a quasi-semi-holiday of sorts. May 1st is Law Day. And okay. Every May 1st, Law Day is a holiday that celebrates the very foundation of the United States of America. It started on May 1st, 1958, by President Dwight D. Eisenhower. So although it's not an official government holiday yet, it's one of those that lawyers, local bar associations, judges, and anybody in the profession of law or legal celebrates. That's pretty interesting.
Oh, okay.
I remember seeing this on a TV show once that they had like this little clip. I think actually it was on like the end of Hogan's Heroes on one of the older shows, and says, don't forget, Monday is Law Day. And, you know, there was no internet back then. And I had to ask somebody, you know, what law. I said, yeah, and then, you know, the people I asked in the legal profession knew what it was.
Yeah.
So it was proposed as a holiday in 1957 by the American Bar Association, D.C. They didn't propose the holiday just to celebrate the role of law, but they proposed the holiday to celebrate anybody in the legal profession. So they created the holiday to focus on every American's rights as laid out in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States. It's pretty interesting, actually. So here's some fast facts about the fast facts. The U.S. Constitution is the oldest and the shortest constitution of any major government in the world. The U.S. Constitution is only 4,400 words long. Ben Franklin was the oldest American to sign the Constitution. He was 81 years old. Women, as we know, didn't obtain the right to vote until 1920. There's approximately one attorney for every 240 people in the United States. There are more than 1.3 million lawyers in the United States. Again, the holiday mainly celebrated by lawyers or people working for huge law firms. Yeah. Special luncheons, DC fundraising events, activities designed to do outreach, again, for the local community to celebrate what kind of law and order. So the fundamentals of law and the role it plays in our society is the fundamental journey of May 1st every year and Law Day. And speaking of attorneys, DC, what state or district in the United States, because, you know, we do have the Virgin Islands and Guam.
Right.
What state has the highest number of lawyers in the United States?
Highest number of lawyers. Oh.
I'd say the obvious, but I would have been wrong.
All right. I'll go with New York.
That's what I would have gone with. Believe it or not, the District of Columbia, Washington, has the highest number of practicing lawyers. I would have said New York followed by California, because California actually is a state, would stretch from New York all the way to Florida. So just out of sheer land volume alone, but I definitely would have said New York State. It is the District of Columbia. So celebrating Law Day on May 1st, D.C., you think about law and your legal freedoms in this great country of ours, my friend.
Absolutely. Definitely. Thank you, Rusty. That is your Fender's Fast and Fun Facts, featured here every week on the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Please stay here for more. You've probably heard a lot about natural gas and how it's helping to bolster America's long-term energy security. But did you know that the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania is home to an abundance of natural gas? This formation is the second largest natural gas field in the world, and the reason why Coterra Energy is investing billions of dollars in the production of this valuable resource. By doing so, we're helping America become a world leader in energy production. We're also helping to generate a stronger local economy by creating hundreds of thousands of jobs and paying millions in taxes and royalties to landowners, farmers, and dairy producers. Clean-burning American natural gas also helps our country reduce energy costs, improves air quality, and protects the environment. Here's to securing our nation's energy future and creating economic prosperity for today's farmers and the generations that follow. Coterra Energy, responsibly producing clean energy for all.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental health, vision, everything is top-notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan. We have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt. You could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that helps out too because it is before taxes. So.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS, you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule, the 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat eating needs.
Pulled pork, ribs, brisket, chicken thighs, grilled chicken planks, ribeye steaks, salmon burgers, and beef burgers, plus salads and side dishes delivered or for catering at your weddings, company parties, and other crazy soirees, you crazy kids. GreenleesBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue. Nice.
Lindy Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Lindy is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindyco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems in Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News. While we spend a few more minutes getting the top five stories of the past week together for you, along with the jobs segment, please enjoy this clip of State of American Energy 2023 from the American Petroleum Institute. This is right on their website, api.org. You can check out the entire program. Here's a few minutes of that.
Appalachia, a region of America known for its grit, for its steel and coal, and for powering America into what we now know as modern life. I'm standing in the single largest natural gas producing region in the world. Nearly one-third of all the natural gas produced in America happened here last year. And one in three U.S. households depend on natural gas. I'm Megan Blumgren from the American Petroleum Institute, and today we'll bring you a firsthand look at how America is making, moving, and improving our energy. Energy. It blends into the background of our daily lives. But without it, life would be fundamentally different. Fortunately, here in America, we have abundant resources, and we produce and use many different types of energy. The most widely used source is oil, followed by natural gas. Together, oil and natural gas make up about two-thirds of the energy we use every day. Oil is used in transportation and to make thousands of household products. And natural gas plays a role in every single sector of our economy, from farming and technology to retail and healthcare. All around us, from vast underground resources to the intricate network that moves energy to where it's needed, to the brilliant minds and hard workers in our communities, American energy is at work for us, In 2022, we felt firsthand just how important energy is. We saw rising inflation and higher costs for goods and services, the first major conflict in Europe since the end of the Second World War, and a serious global energy crunch. Americans support producing more of our own energy resources here, at home, than ever before. Here in the scenic foothills, amazing progress is quietly underway to do just that. New wells developed, new products invented, jobs created, and thousands of miles of pipelines moving energy. There's more work to be done, but American Energy accepts the challenge. Over the course of today's State of American Energy broadcast, you'll meet industry talent and see tech breakthroughs, like the cutting-edge emission reduction technologies being perfected in laboratories, or the way American natural gas is changing and improving the global energy mix, and how more infrastructure can deliver more energy from where it's produced to where it's most needed. All of this progress is a reminder that the solution is here. With a skilled American workforce standing shoulder to shoulder to keep our country strong, from systems engineers to truck drivers to biologists, our sector employs the best and brightest, supplying jobs that support communities across the country. Today, you'll hear from experts about how they're shaping our energy future and what's needed to ensure America's success. Because something extraordinary is underway here in West Virginia and in neighboring Pennsylvania and Ohio. But it's not just happening here. Across the country, America's natural gas and oil is fueling energy progress and powering a brighter future.
Stay tuned for more of the Shale Gas News. You've probably heard a lot about natural gas and how it's helping to bolster America's long-term energy security. But did you know that the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania is home to an abundance of natural gas? This formation is the second largest natural gas field in the world, and the reason why Coterra Energy is investing billions of dollars in the production of this valuable resource. By doing so, we're helping America become a world leader in energy production. We're also helping to generate a stronger local economy by creating hundreds of thousands of jobs and paying millions in taxes and royalties to landowners, farmers, and dairy producers. Clean-burning American natural gas also helps our country reduce energy costs, improves air quality, and protects the environment. Here's to securing our nation's energy future and creating economic prosperity for today's farmers and the generations that follow. Coterra Energy, responsibly producing clean energy for all.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Lindy Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindyco.com. Lindy installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindyco.com.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's Continuing Education Department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Yes, welcome back to the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we'll see what kind of jobs, what kind of careers we got out there available in the gas and other energy industries. See what kind of employment you might be seeking. But first, it's time for the top five stories of the past week. Each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Their website, marcellusdrilling.com. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list, the top stories each week. So here you go, a summary of the top five most read stories on MDN over the past 7 days. Coming in at number five last week, Chesapeake makes slow progress cleaning up spills at Northeast Pennsylvania pad. There's an ongoing issue with cleanup at a Chesapeake Energy well pad in Bradford County, Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, the DEP, showed up at the site to conduct an inspection earlier this year in January. The DEP inspector found, quote, multiple pools and puddles on the site contaminated with drilling wastewater and possible fracking chemical fluids. The DEP issued a notice of violation, an NOV, for failing to prevent contamination from being discharged on the site. Chesapeake promised to get it cleaned up, yet in multiple repeat inspections since then, inspectors have continued to find contaminated fluids on the ground. David Hess, former secretary of the DEP from 2001 to 2003, did some digging through the DEP's oil and gas compliance database and found and chronicled what has been happening at Chesapeake's Floyd well pad in Tuscarora Township. He refers to it as a, quote, brownfield site, which we think is melodramatic. He implies this kind of thing is routine, happening wherever they go, referring to shale drillers. We certainly hope it is not. What you will read in Hess's chronicle is something that should not happen. Yes, shale drilling is an industrial activity and accidents happen. Accidents and negative environmental harms happen at solar farms and windmill sites, too. The difference is that our companies are held to a higher standard than so-called renewable energy companies. We pretty much have to be perfect all the time. When a problem's discovered, our firms must not waste any time correcting it. Rusty?
Number four, DC, Forest Service issues a final EIS to the Mountain Valley Pipeline for the third time. Now, this past week, the 303-mile, 94% complete Mountain Valley Pipeline project received the final supplemental environmental impact statement from the United States Forest Service, cleaning the way for the pipeline to get built through a piddly 3.5 miles of the Jefferson National Forest. Ring those bells, dance for joy, blow the party noisemakers, right? Wrong. This is the third time this same permit has been issued. No one was impressed. We only found a single news story about it. The stock of Equitrans, the builder, moved up one penny on the news. Why the muted response? Well, because everyone has seen the movie before. What happens next is that the big green lawyers, who apparently have some mystical influence or sway with a three-judge panel of Democrats with the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit, will challenge this permit. And then the three clown judges who sit on the panel will vote to overturn the permit. This happens every darn time, which is why Congress must rip this project away from the Fourth Circuit. That court cannot be allowed to hear any more challenges of this project. Its judges are compromised. Quite simply, the Fourth Circuit is rigged against the Mountain Valley Pipeline. There is no fairness. There is no justice for the Mountain Valley Pipeline at the Fourth Circuit.
All right, the third most popular story over the past week at MarcellusDrilling.com. Natural gas is the new oil. World events affect price everywhere. Some interesting insights from S&P Global Commodity Insights into how the world has changed. S&P's analysts say the Russia-Ukraine war is in the process of, quote, resetting the energy sector. With natural gas turning into a global and interconnected market affected by events and dynamics far beyond its traditional physical scope. In fact, S&P says natural gas is now similar to some extent to what oil used to be for decades. We'll explain. Because oil is a liquid, it is easily transported and stored. Because oil is a commodity, it can be used anywhere in the world. The same barrel of oil can be refined here in the U.S. or in any other country around the world with a refinery, and it makes no difference. Because of that quality, the price of oil is greatly influenced by world demand and world markets. Natural gas, on the other hand, is a gas and not easily transported apart from a pipeline. Nat gas is local and regional, getting used near where it is produced. Supercooling natural gas turns it into liquid LNG. When gas becomes LNG, it takes on the advantages of oil with an ability to be more easily transported and used virtually anywhere in the world, anywhere with a port and a regasification plant. Because more gas is being liquefied and turned into LNG and transported around the world, events around the world that affect the use of gas are now beginning to affect the price of gas everywhere. Gone are the days when gas markets were local and regional. The market has become the world, and demand in other countries or events like an LNG carrier getting stuck in a canal affect the price of gas everywhere, including here at home. Rusty?
Number two, DC, Pennsylvania natural gas production dropped in 2022, the first time since shale began. So we spotted a post by the United States Energy Information Administration that at first glance we thought, yeah, we know that and we've talked about it. But on second glance, and after searching our own archives, we came to the conclusion that perhaps we haven't talked about it. At least not plainly. The it we're talking about is this. In 2022, Pennsylvania's annual natural gas production decreased for the first time since the shale revolution began, which is notable. The decrease in production for 2022 over 2021 wasn't much. It was just down 2% to an average of 20.5 billion cubic feet a day in 22. But clearly, it went down.
All right, here you go. The number one most popular story on MDN over the past week. Bad guy wins. Builder cancels $1 billion Renovo gas-fired power plant. The same three radicalized environmental groups that have repeatedly attacked the $1.1 billion Renovo Energy Center, REC, a Marcellus gas-fired power plant planned for Clinton County, Pennsylvania, have finally won. The Clean Air Council, Penn Future, and the Center for Biological Diversity, all completely radicalized fossil fuel bigots, have repeatedly challenged permits for REC. Last week, the builder of the project, Bechtel Corporation, announced it is pulling out of the project, which has been in the planning stages for 8 years. The reason for canceling the project is because of, quote, the ongoing appeals from environmental groups. What a tragedy. Sometimes the bad guys do win, unfortunately. That's life. There you go. The top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you like to keep track of the latest Marcellus and Utica news each day, it's easy. Just subscribe to Marcellus Drilling News at marcellusdrilling.com. Click on the subscribe link. It's only $7.95 a month or $79.50 if you pay for the whole year. Now it's time for the jobs segment. Checking out careers in the gas and other energy industries. It is brought to us by Lackawanna College, their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty?
And we'll start in Pennsylvania, D.C., where the Miller Pipeline is looking for pipeline laborers. 10 openings. It's the Gas Distribution Division, headquartered in Lancaster. DNV. It's not kind of like the DMV, but this is DNV, as in Victor. Utility and pipeline specialists are looking for a GIS specialist. That's a remote position in Mechanicsburg. UGI, Central Gas Control, looking for a gas controller level one based in Wyomissing. That's in the Reading area. Kinder Morgan, an opening for an operations specialist. That's based in Cottersport, McKean County. Black Rock Resources, looking for a transmission and a district pipeline manager. That'll be headquartered in Wexford. Mears Energy Group, looking for pipeline technicians. That'll be headquartered in Pittsburgh. Those will be headquartered in Pittsburgh. The Energy Transfer Family of Partnerships, an opening for a welder. That's for the IC unit out of Greensburg, and we've covered this. It's shielded metal arc flux core stick. Marathon Petroleum looking for a measurement supervisor headquartered in Washington. And West Penn Energy Services just posted a pipeline laborer position. It's out of Shellacotta. Moving to Ohio, Centaurus Limited, an opening for a compression technician out of St. Clairsville. Pipeline conditioning, an opening for a field engineer, must travel the entire Buckeye state of Ohio. Burns and McDonald, an opening for an EPC project manager, that's pipelines and facilities out of Columbus. And then again, you'll be working multiple locations. That's Burns and McDonald. Summit Midstream Partners, they just posted a measurement technician job that they'll be opening in Jacobsburg. Diversified Energy Companies looking for pipeline technicians, 10 openings out of Zanesville, and two rig hands based in New Philadelphia, Ohio. Equitrans Midstream looking for an operations technician level one or two, and then a senior. So there's three jobs. They're all based in Belmont. And Utility Solutions of Ohio, they have an opening for a pipeline laborer out of New Albany. Let's check West Virginia, where Antero Resources Corporation, an opening for a plant operator level one out of West Union. Southwest Energy, that's SWN, looking for a field date service engineer. That'll be headquartered in Morgantown. Team Fischel, an opening for a gas fuser and three pipe welders. That's out of Wheeling. TC Energy, they have an opening for a project engineer and a pipeline business analyst. So those are two openings. They're both based in Charleston, West Virginia. Hope Gas, looking for a GIS technician level one. That's geographic information systems. It's mapping out of Parkersburg. A Mountaineer Gas Company, an opening for a natural gas compliance administrator out of Oak Hill. And 10 Mile Lane, LLC, an opening for an oil and gas abstractor based in Bridgeport. Got a few in New York State. New Fortress Energy, an opening for a benefits specialist. It's an office job headquartered in New York City. LaBella Associates, they have a posting for a field construction manager for the natural gas unit. It's out of Poughkeepsie. Kinder Morgan, an opening for an operations specialist based in Sloatsburg. Precision Pipeline Solutions, a meter reader. It's out of New Windsor. And gas field specialist looking for five laborers for the oil and gas unit. That'll be based in Horseheads between Binghamton and Vestal in southern New York State. And those, as DC mentioned, are the jobs this week sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Our second week into our 10th year on the Shale Gas News, continuing on our network of stations. We'll see you next week, same time, same radio stations, hopefully, for the Shale Gas News. We thank you for listening. For Bill DeRosa, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fender. Thanks again for listening to the Shale Gas News.